On this episode of the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast, Ghost Joe and Creepy Ken talk about the 1924 Ape Canyon incident. You're not going to want to miss that. Plus, Edgegrave Dave gives us his awesome horrible review on the new movie, Megan 2.0. Check it out. It's coming up right now.
Do aliens exist and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast. I'm Ghost Joe, and this is Season 5, Episode 3. I don't know why I keep announcing it, but hey, what the hell. I'm Ghost Joe, and with me is...
Creepy Ken.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's sticking. That's it. I'm gonna put that on everything. That's gonna be on the website. I don't even have a website anymore, but that's gonna be everywhere. So deal with it. So we have a good show for you guys tonight. We're gonna be talking about the 1924 Ape Canyon incident. And it's very, very cool. Is it the first incident of the first known occurrence of the big smelly guy?
It is one of the first. It is definitely the most famous incident of that guy. Yes, it is. Other than, of course, you know, the famous Gimlin tapes or whatever they are, you know.
Right. Right.
But that wasn't necessarily an incident. This is an actual incident. It's a crazy wild ride, man. It's really a crazy wild ride. So,
all right. So getting that driver's seat, man. Go ahead. Let's hear it.
So I'm going to set the scene a little bit here. So takes place in a narrow gorge on the southeast shoulder of Mount St. Helens. And when I say narrow, I mean, it constricts to just 8 feet wide in certain points. And it's a very, very remote, dense forest and very, very rugged terrain. And it's now part of a national forest. And I'm not even going to try to say that national forest name because... Okay, so I'll try to say it. Are you ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
The Gifford Pinchot National Forest. That's my best go. I'm not even going to attempt to say that. It's the French words that give me the hard time, man. I'm telling you, I need to brush up on that.
I think that was pretty good, though. Yeah, the Gifford, the T would have to be silent, right?
That's what I'm thinking, too.
The T is silent, so it would be the Gifford Pinchot, National Forest. Yeah.
You're having a hard time with the national part. I was having a hard time with the other.
I don't know what's going on. Yeah. All right, so... Keep going, sir. Keep going.
So at the time, Mount St. Helens was really, really quiet. It was 56 years before, you know, the famous eruption of 1980 happened. And gold prospecting was really, really active in that area in the Pacific Northwest. So there's a couple of important details that I'll get to, but I'm going to get to them later. I just want to kind of paint the story of what happened. So there were five miners that had a gold claim out on this mountain, out on Mount St. Helens. And, they built a little cabin there, you know, and put it all together. And in the days leading up to what would be known as the incident, there were five men. They're Fred Beck, Marion Smith. Smith had his son with him, Roy Smith, a guy named Gabe Lefevre, and John Peterson. Those were the five men. So they started noticing these weird things as they were up there, because as you can imagine, this was their life. They spent weeks and weeks and weeks at this claim, you know. So they started finding these large footprints all over the place. They were about 19 inches long, and they were 4 inches deep. So, you know, 4 inches is pretty significant. Something with some heavy weight was put on this. And the interesting thing is that the footprints had four toes. So four toes, footprints. All right. So they were hearing in the evening time this shrill whistling sound that was they couldn't tell at first if it was echoing or if it was like communication. You know what I mean? Because it sounded like from one range, they could hear it close, and then another range, they could hear the sound coming back. But sometimes when it came back, it sounded different. So that kind of got them thinking about things, you know? And then they would hear this thumping noise that sounded like a, think of a gorilla beating on its chest. You know, that's what it sounded like. So that's the closest thing they could put on it. So the first encounter, two of the men, Hank and I'm not sure which other one, they went out to a spring to gather some water, and they, on the ridge that was close to them, they saw this large, hairy creature. It had blackish brown hair, and they said it was about 7 feet tall. And Fred Beck shot at it, of course, because, you know, what do you do in 1924 when you see this large creature and you have your gun and you're out in the middle of nowhere, you shoot at things. I guess that's what you do. Absolutely. I mean, I don't know why he shot at it, because the thing wasn't bothering him. Maybe it just scared him. I don't know. People in 1924, they're a little trigger happy for me, man. but yeah, because that's what I'm going to do. The first time I see something that I don't know what it is, I just shoot at it. Yeah, that's human nature, isn't it? That's all the way human nature. I
mean, if you can't understand what it is too, though, I mean, I don't know. I mean, yeah. That's crazy. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Give them a gun, you know, they'll shoot at it. So they said the creature hid behind a tree and was peeking its head out after they shot at it. And they shot at it again, and they said they saw the bullet hit the tree, and then that's when the creature ran away. Hmm. So about 5 hours later, it was around midnight. The men had already, you know, packed in for the night. They had bunk beds they made in this cabin. The first incident happened, and it's pretty crazy because, you know, could you imagine being asleep at midnight? You just worked your butt off all day out there, and all of a sudden they had heard this huge thud that hit the cabin wall on the side. Mm-hmm. They didn't know what the heck it was, man. And then they were, you know, it woke them up, of course, and they were like, what in the heck was that? What in the heck was that? And then they started hearing like stomping and footprints. I don't know. Footprints. Is that the one? Is that the word I'm looking for? Footfalls outside, I guess. You know, they outside of the cabin, and they weren't your usual footsteps, I guess. They were louder and more robust. So they were trying to peek out the windows to see who was out there, maybe, you know, trying to steal their stuff or whatever. And the cabin just started getting pelted with rocks from all over the place. I mean, just all over the place. And I couldn't even imagine, first of all, being woken up in the middle of the night by something like that hitting. And, you know, that cabin couldn't have been that well constructed. You know, these guys went out there and cut down trees and built it, you know? So some of these rocks that they said were getting thrown at the cabin were pretty significant in size. They weren't just like little pebble rocks. They were crazy. They started hearing pounding on the doors and walls, and something was trying to get in, you know? They said they heard what sounded like somebody climbing on the roof and stomping. They were able to look out. I guess the cabin had no windows, so they were able to look out between the chinking in the wood, and they saw hairy creatures out there, the same ones that he saw on the ridge. And when he saw that initial one, he did report it back to the men, and of course they didn't believe him. Well, now they believe him, because there's several of them out there. So the creature that was on the roof was actually trying to smash through the roof, and they shot at it. they shot at this creature through the ceiling, and it went down. And then they were pounding so hard that it was knocking the chinking off, and they made a section of the wall kind of exposed. And next to that section of the wall was an axe leaning up against it. And I guess one of the creatures reached its hand in and grabbed the axe handle, and Fred Beck was able to grab the axe handle and turn it so it couldn't get it outside. And they wrestled it away, and they shot at it, shot at the arm, and it finally let go. So that's pretty crazy. And this went on for 5 hours, man, 5 hours. This went on, all of this chaos went on for 5 hours until daybreak. And they could actually hear these creatures retreat back into the woods. And that's when they decided to go check out what happened, you know, what was going on. And when they opened the doors of the cabin, what they found was their camp in complete disarray, of course, rocks all over the place. And just, I couldn't even imagine. Could you imagine that?
That's insane. All these creatures coming after you like that. And it also, they had to brace the door because these creatures were also trying to break down the door as well. That's terrifying, man. You know, like,
yeah,
I can never imagine something like that. That's, I mean, and the fact that, like, it's not people, that's the scariest part about it. You know what I mean? Like, these are creatures, and obviously Bigfoot wasn't, I don't think they were watching Bigfoot TikToks and stuff like that, you know, back then. So they had no idea what the hell they were looking at. And I mean, that's terrifying.
No joke.
You know.
Yeah, they said they look like big hairy apes is exactly how they described these. 7 foot tall hairy apes. But yeah, they did. They braced the door with, they tore apart one of the bunk beds that they had made and braced the door with a piece of the wood from the bunk bed, which is pretty smart. But what do you do in that situation? You know, you just, I mean, there's nothing you can do. You're kind of a sitting duck there in the, cabin while this is going on, you know? But yeah, so the next morning they decided that scared the heck out of them. So they decided they were just going to get in the vehicle and leave. And that's what they did. But on their way out, they saw one of the creatures up on the ridge and they shot at it again. This time they hit it. I know. Right. And it fell down into a gorge, and they took off and they went back to the town where they came from. So what happened after that is the U.S. Forest Service launched a huge investigation, because when they got back to the town, they started telling people what happened. The U.S. Forest Service came out. I think the Rangers were J.H. Huffman and William Welch. They came out, and the men took them back up to the I think Fred Beck took them back up, because I think the rest of the men refused to go.
Right.
Took them back up, and what they found was all the men's equipment was there. They left all their equipment. That's how scared they were. They left all their equipment, every single piece of it. And they just got in their trucks got in their vehicle and left. But they did. They launched this huge investigation. They found absolutely no physical evidence of the creatures. They looked in the canyon where the men said that the creature fell. They didn't find anything down there. They did find 14-inch footprints, and concluded that they were most likely faked. And the official conclusion of that was that the story was likely a fabrication, you know, or an embellishment, whatever. Now, one of the things that I will say is that not too far from here, and I found this out afterwards, not too far from here, there was a YMCA camp that operated at a lake called Spirit Lake, and had been there since 1909. And one of the theories is that, you know, some teenagers from the YMCA went out there and saw the men and thought it'd be fun to do, you know, mess with them, which, yeah, I probably would have done something like that was when I was a teenager, but they said that these were boulders that were hitting this the side of the cabin. You know, some of these were significant that, you know, the men alone couldn't pick up themselves. So there aren't a bunch of teenagers out there throwing boulders at a cabin. You know what I mean? And the fact that they saw these creatures, not just once, not just during the attack, they saw it before the attack, they saw it after the attack. Why would they say that they saw these creatures that virtually no one had heard of if they hadn't seen it? You know what I mean? If it was YMCA kids, why would they make up the story? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Also you gotta think about this too. Like, these guys were minors. Like they like, these are like roughneck, like, you know, these are not prank guys, you know, like, yeah. These are real serious, hardworking, you know, men's men, you know, like they're not going to be coming up with a stupid story. What for? And back then it was no 15 minutes of fame. It was, you know, there was no TV. It wasn't stuff like that. Nobody was, you know, they weren't making TikToks, you know, like in 1924, you know? Yeah. So what would they gain out of doing that? Nothing, nothing at all.
Nothing at all. And, you know, going along with that, you know, hardened seasoned miners thing, these guys, two things to think about there is, you know, some of the theories were that these were misidentified animals, which BS, man. I mean, these guys are out in these woods all the time. They know what a bear looks like. They know what a deer looks like, what an elk looks like. They aren't going to say they're, you know, what they said they were if they were bear. They know what bear looked like, you know. And bears don't throw boulders also. You know, they just don't. And that's another thing. Plus, the fact that these guys left virtually all their equipment up there that they worked hard to get. I mean, some of that equipment isn't cheap, man. You know, some of the,
especially then. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, it's stuff you don't get back.
Right.
And the fact that the other men would refuse to go back up there. I mean, think about that. You spent all that time up there searching for your spot, right? To get your claim. And then you go as far as build a cabin, build bunk beds inside of the cabin, you know, build a whole camp. Virtually you're staying up there for weeks. So why would you go through all that trouble just to give that up? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Another one of the theories is that the guys hoaxed this because they wanted people to stay away from their claim because they thought this would scare people. When they weren't around, other people couldn't go up and just work their claim, which was illegal, but I'm sure people did it anyway. But this was kind of to protect their territory, so to speak. Which would be an okay theory, but the men never went back up there ever again.
Right.
Like, that was the end of it. So why would they do that? And, you know, something scared the hell out of these guys because they didn't go back up there. Which is, I find, one of the most telling pieces of, I don't even know if you'd call it evidence, but one of the most telling points of the story is that they never went back up there again.
Yeah, I mean,
No, go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, what I was going to say was, and a lot of this stuff that they said had happened, you know, as far as with the rocks being thrown and stuff like that, is basically what a lot of people say that happens with these Bigfoot sightings, you know, with Sasquatch sightings, is, you know, rocks, or, you know, you hear knocking on trees and stuff. Then you'll find trees completely broken in half. That's another Bigfoot thing. One of the things that a lot of people actually say as far as Bigfoot footprints is that one of the theories is that it's bear prints, where a bear, you know, steps with his first foot and then his hind foot goes into the same into the same hole as the front foot. So it makes the foot much bigger. And that's where they, you know, that's one of the claims of where Bigfoot footprints come from, possibly. You know, that's what they're saying could be instead of actually Bigfoot. But I don't know, man, just like we had said a while back, like, I feel like there's way too many claims about Bigfoot for it not to be true. I think if any cryptid is the real thing, it's got to be him, you know, or them. So obviously, it's them, not him, because apparently there's a lot of these big feet, big foots,
big footses,
you know,
big foot tie.
There you go. There's apparently a lot of them, and they're spread across the country. And I think there were even some sightings in Canada as well, too.
Yep.
So. You know, Bigfoot gets around.
So I guess just to be clear, I did look up, and one of the first Bigfoot sightings ever was in 1811, believe it or not.
Wow.
I did not know that. So yeah, I guess people did know about Bigfoot then. So we can't use that as our crutch, because it obviously people know about it. So, but the other thing about this story is that it was such a big story. It really ended up being a big story. It went to various news outlets and caught fire across the country. They ended up renaming that section Ape Canyon. That's its official name is Ape Canyon. So that's kind of cool, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure that they must have, you know, Bigfoot, you know, fairs and stuff like that all over there too. It's probably their claim to fame over there too, I'm sure.
Yeah, probably. I'm not even sure about that, but that's kind of cool.
Yeah, man.
I know Fred Beck later on did he did write a book, and I think it's a pretty significant book that he wrote, because he in this book he said that he believes, and this is probably the first time, it isn't the first time I've heard it, but I think it may be the first time it's been said. He believes that these are creatures not from here. They're able to come in and out of our reality. So it's pretty insightful that somebody back then said that. They were not like creatures of our dimension. They were creatures from beyond. They were almost ghost-like. Huh. So I think that's pretty interesting that has to be where that concept came from.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, we've heard that before, you know, of that possibly being a claim.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I know that later on, like, Bigfoot historians and all kinds of extensive investigations have been done up there. It's a really not since the volcano, erupted, it's become really, really hard to get to. But I know I watched a TV show not too long ago. But I think it was aired in 2013 that this guy claimed to discover the original location of the cabin. And he even said that he found square nails and an axe. And I remember seeing this in a TV show and thinking how interesting that was, that he found square nails, because, you know, square nails are pretty definitive of that era. So in there, I'm sure there aren't too many claims or, cabins out that way, things that people built up there in the middle of a narrow gorge, you know? So I thought that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, no, it was definitely an interesting case. I mean, I know I'm a paranormal guy, but I never even heard this before you had brought it to my attention. I guess I most of the research I normally do usually is like the ghost research, UFO kind of stuff. So I don't really delve too much. I mean, I love this stuff though with the cryptids. So that's definitely a cool story about the Ape Canyon. Very, very cool.
Yeah, Bigfoot's pretty. There's a plethora of Bigfoot stories out there. I mean, you got Yeah, I think it was a guy in, I think it was Michigan that claimed to be able to speak to Bigfoot. You have tons and tons of stories of people that were kidnapped by Bigfoot. There's a pretty famous case, and I cannot think of the guy's name. So I'm just going to go off the rail here. I'm probably going to get most of it wrong, but I believe he was hiking and said that a Bigfoot kidnapped him. I don't know if he passed out, something happened, and he woke up to being walked across the terrain on the shoulder of this big hairy creature. Hmm. And he had his backpack on him still. And when he was in and out of consciousness, and when he arrived, he was in this big cave. And he said that there was a mom Bigfoot and a dad Bigfoot and a little girl Bigfoot, I think it was. And I forget how long exactly they had him captive in there, but the dad would get mad at him when he would try to talk. And he said these things were talking back and forth to each other, but he couldn't understand what they were saying, which is pretty interesting. But he said that they would feed him, and he had stuff in his backpack, and he would give them little things and you know, from his backpack, and they thought it was interesting. And the dad would always grab it first and look at it, you know, and he kept trying to find ways to escape. And I think he was in there for a couple of weeks with these things. And he could not find a way to escape. He said if it was just the mom and the kid, then he thinks he could get away with it. But he was really, really afraid of the dad, you know, because it was huge. And it's crazy to think about. But the way he did end up getting away is he had a can of snuff in his bag. And, you know, back in the day, snuff was, it isn't like the snuff of today. It's snuff was like a powdery tobacco. It was powdered tobacco, basically. And people snorted it. You snort it and you get this high from, you know, like a buzz, like you would if you were chewing tobacco or whatever. And he pulled this tin out, and the dad grabbed it from him, opened it up, and ate the whole thing. And he said he just watched, and a couple minutes later, this thing started just writhing in pain and was on the ground getting sick and rolling around. And he said that's when he made his escape. He got up and took off running, and he said the female chased him for a while, but he ended up getting away. He had a good head start on it because it was tending to the male, I guess, when it was in its pain. But wow. Yeah, really, there's tons and tons of interesting Bigfoot stories out there. And I'm in the mind that I don't even care if they're made up. They're interesting that these things are out there, you know. And the theories on Bigfoot just are really deep. There are lots of really deep theories. You know, you almost always see with a Bigfoot, a UFO.
Right.
Almost at the same time. I think it's some crazy, like 78% of the time, something like that, that you, when you have a Bigfoot experience, you also have a UFO experience. So I find that pretty interesting.
Right.
So what does that mean? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean, are they aliens? Are they like scouts? Is that, you know, I mean, maybe they are interdimensional, and, you know, so are UFOs. I mean, it's crazy the theories that you kind of come up with. I think nowadays, I think more people are thinking that they're interdimensional than just regular creatures out there, you know?
Yeah.
It would make sense. I mean, as much as interdimensional could make sense, it would make sense because we haven't found any of the dead bodies, you know?
Exactly.
Stuff like that. Or, you know, in this case, they, you know, he shot the Bigfoot or he fell off the gorge and they couldn't find the body, you know, unless the other Bigfoots take the bodies or whatever, hide their, you know, who knows, but it definitely makes sense that they could be interdimensional, I guess, in that sense.
Yeah, for sure. And, You know, that interesting about them not finding bodies. You know, it wasn't long ago that we first discovered that apes were real. They were kind of a cryptid before we found them, the great ape, right?
Right.
Like, and it wasn't that long ago. What was it, 1920 something? 1910? It wasn't that long ago.
No.
And before that, they were just like, oh yeah, they'd hear stories of them and people go, oh yeah, those aren't real. They aren't real. And then boom, they're real, you know? The really interesting thing about gorillas and apes and that sort of thing is you don't find their bodies either. Like, you don't just find their bodies and bones because they bury their dead. So, right. I mean, I don't know if Bigfoot do that, but I always found that correlation, or I always found that as a possibility, you know,
right.
That maybe
right.
they do. I don't know. But I know there's no shortage of Bigfoot stories out there. And this just happened to be one of my favorites because it's, you don't hear of them attacking all that often, you know, like,
no.
You will every once in a while, but not all the time. Usually, yeah, I talked to a guy one time, Joe. He said that he was a Bigfoot researcher and he was in Michigan as well. And he said he's been researching Bigfoot for 20 years, you know. And he'd always go to the same spot and he'd see him all the time. He could see him like almost every time he showed up, which I found unusual, but he said he thought that they were getting familiar with him since he goes to the same spot every time and he always sees them. And I'm like, okay, maybe, you know, I don't know. So then he tells me one day he was getting in his truck and, you know, he spent 20 years the same spot. One time he was getting in his truck and he heard somebody call his name. And he was like, what? And he said, yeah, I heard somebody call my name. And I turned around and said, hello? He said, and then it called my name again. And he's like, what in the heck? And then he said he saw a Bigfoot and the Bigfoot was calling his name. And I said, all right, listen, man, you know, like,
right, right.
You had me all the way up to this point when Bigfoot's now saying words and talking. You know what I mean? Now you kind of lost me, man. And he said, well, listen, they aren't dumb. He said, we haven't found a body yet. Nobody's even really found one. He said, they're not dumb. They know about us. He goes, and I've been visiting the spot for 20 years. He said, so when I'm up there, I talk, I say things. He goes, who in the heck knows? I mean, maybe they picked up on that and they've been practicing and try to say, you know, and I'm like, okay, that's a little bit more credence to what you're saying. I didn't think of it like that, you know? So I just thought that was kind of a cool story to throw in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's put that out there too. If anybody's ever seen a Bigfoot or any cryptid or anything paranormal, 845-600-0744, let us know about it. You could do it anonymously if you want to, and we'll play it on the show if you want us to. If you don't, that's cool too. We could just tell the story, or you could email us at ghostjoeny@gmail.com also. And we'd definitely love to hear your experiences if you've seen any of that. I actually had a guy, he was on my show a couple times, called Al Santariga. His name is Al Santariga, and he's called the Squatch Father.
Okay.
And, yeah, and he's had many, many experiences, actually, from Bigfoot to Dogman. And he said Dogman terrified him. You know,
yeah.
I think he said that he was within like 5 feet of Bigfoot. You know, he said that terrified him. And he gets visited actually by UFOs quite often as well. Apparently he's had some UFO experiences and he's like to this day, sometimes like that there'll be a UFO near his house or something like that. So he has many, many stories and, very, very cool guy. Very interesting guy. I actually got to see him at a seminar last year, a few months back, where he told some of his stories as well. So, yeah, man. Bigfoot. That's And the fact that in this case there were many of them is crazy, you know? I mean, and that they were, you would assume that the reason why they were doing that though was because they weren't doing that before he shot at them, right? Like they.
No, not that, that I'm aware of. Yep. So, yep. They were just finding little evidence. Yeah. I'd be pissed too if you shot at me.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. You know?
So yeah, they kind of served the opening volley there and, you know, got what they asked for, you know?
Absolutely.
But, you know, I also want to add to the call-in, if you had an experience and stuff like that, if you are a Bigfoot and you have learned how to say Joe's name or learned how to use the phone, call in and say Joe's name or talk to us, man. I mean, come on, Bigfoot. You know, that would be awesome.
Or Creepy Ken. I mean, you could talk to Creepy Ken also, you know.
That's that would
sticking,
be awesome.
Man. That's sticking. That's definitely sticking. But yeah, no, that's yeah, definitely, man. I have shirts at Bonfire for new designs and stuff. They're up there. Please check them out. All the proceeds go to charity if you buy one of these shirts. Four different charities I have going on with them. So definitely check out the link in the show notes and you'll see them. Please order. It's for a good cause. And you get to rock out some of our merch. So, yeah.
Have you ever seen, what the heck was that show called? Oh, God, I can't think of it. It's still on. Expedition Unknown, I think it was.
So I never really watch any of those shows. I've never watched like Expedition Bigfoot. Or really any of those shows, because I feel like you never get any answers from them. You know, it's like a long ride for them to say, like in the beginning of the show, they'll all start out by saying, in this episode, we're gonna find out the truth about Bigfoot and, you know, whether he likes to use the phone or something. And then at the end of the show, you'll watch like the whole show for an hour. And then like the last line will be like, I guess we'll never know for sure if Bigfoot is around, you know, like, what did I watch this for then? You know? So no. I guess you watch it for the ride, I guess, but I never watched many of those shows.
It's pretty interesting. So Josh Gates is the host of that show, but he had another show before that. And I can't remember what the name of it was, but he'd go out and explore all these little things. And Josh Gates is hardcore, man. That dude is like, I don't know if you like, you got to watch it. Cause Josh Gates is like one of the last real, true freaking, explorer type deals. So his grandfather was the person that, okay, his grandfather was the model for Indiana Jones. So his grandfather was a adventurer, explorer, and they modeled Indiana Jones after his grandfather. So that's pretty interesting. And Josh he's hardcore in it, man, but he dabbles in a little bit of everything. You know, he likes the paranormal stuff and it's really fascinating. But he was, God, I forget where he was at. And he found they were in the woods. It was dark. It was rainy. I think they were in Washington. And he caught something with the FLIR and was chasing it down and ended up finding a big ass footprint and made a cast out of it. And I mean, this thing was huge. excuse me. But anyway, it's really cool because there's a ride at Disney down in Orlando, and it's called, I think, the Yeti or something like that. It's a really cool ride. The actual footprint is on display there. The plaster cast of that Josh Gates took, which is pretty cool.
Really? I went on that ride. I went on that ride 2 years ago. I went on that ride.
Yeah, it's on display right there. And when you're standing in line, they got it in a case, and it's got Josh's picture right next to it, and it's the actual plaster cast of that footprint. Yeah, it's pretty neat, man. But I like that guy's stuff, man. He's pretty to the point and pretty good, and he isn't one of these guys that just believes in everything. I like him. I like people like that. So,
yeah, I actually remember that ride, man. I mean, I've went on rides, you know, throughout my life, and that one I needed to take a seat after. I remember that.
Yeah, ride.
That was a tough one. That drop at the end was a tough one.
Dude, you know what got me was when it went backwards. That's what freaked me out, yeah, man, on that ride. I wasn't ready for that.
I had looked it up, so I knew it was going to go backwards, but yeah, no, that terrified me. Yeah. That one, cause my daughter chickened out at the last second. She was like, oh yeah, yeah, I'll go. Like, all right, great. And then was standing there online. She goes, no, I don't want to go. I said, well, I'm already invested, so I'm going. And then, after that, they're like, whoa, what'd you think? I'm like, I got to sit down.
Yeah.
I need a minute. I need a minute after that one.
Yeah, it's a fun ride, though. It's fun.
Oh, yeah.
So let me tell you about my Bigfoot experience, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I had a Bigfoot experience. So when I first moved to South Carolina, I found South Carolina not as exciting as Ohio, because Ohio is really one of the strangest states in our country. There's so much weirdness that goes there. I mean, you've got everything from Silver Lake Dogmen to the Lake Erie Monster. You have a plethora of things down on the Ohio River. You have the Melonheads. You have all kinds of stuff. So when I moved down here to South Carolina, I'm like, you guys have Bigfoot and a lizard man. How exciting. Like, that's pretty much it. You know, I was like, this stinks. So I started, you know, keeping my eyes open, because I drive a lot for work. So I'm keeping my eyes open for Bigfoot, and, you know, because there's a ton of sightings down in South Carolina of Bigfoot. And I'm driving along the stretch of road, and there's a curb, and it's kind of like a bridge. So it's a curved bridge, and it's not a very big bridge. It's a really short bridge over this little, like, river thing that goes, you know, creek or whatever. And I'll tell you what, man, out of the corner of my eye, I see Bigfoot, and he's standing down in by the water, just out of the corner of my eye, man. And I'm like, what did I just see? You know, like, holy crap, I just saw Bigfoot. And I'm getting all excited. I get on the phone. First thing I do is call my wife. I'm like, you're not going to believe this. I just saw Bigfoot. And she's like, yeah, right. Cause my wife, she believes in lots of stuff. She thinks the opposite of you, Joe. She thinks that Bigfoot is just nothing. You know, he's not Bigfoot. She says he's the least likely to exist. She thinks she just, I don't know.
Really?
Anyway. So yeah, I don't know why, but I hit a driveway real quick, turn back around, come back down. I'm like, I hope he's still there, man. Cause I'm getting I told her I have to let you go, cause I'm going to take a picture. You know, if I see him, and I'm getting it ready, and I go by and I see him again, Joe.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. It was one of them stupid cutout silhouette things, them black things that, you know, people, you know, the cowboy and all that. You ever seen those? The wooden silhouettes that absolutely people cut out? Yep. Yeah. It was a Bigfoot down in there. It was like 8 foot tall. That's what it was a Bigfoot. It was a cutout Bigfoot silhouette.
Was he as blurry in person as he is in every picture?
No, but I was so angry that's what it was. And I turned around and wasted my time. And you know what? The bad thing is I cannot for the life of me ever remember where that is. And I pass it. I will pass it every once in a while. And it gets me every single time. It's perfectly placed in the very, like, perfect place for you. Cause you're just driving by so fast and you just see it out of the corner of your eye. And you're like, oh my God, it's Bigfoot. And that's not Bigfoot, man. Why would somebody do that to me, Joe? Like, seriously.
That's crazy. That's
crazy. It is.
Well, you know, yeah, you had an experience. That's great. You know, I I drive to work on the midnight shift every night, and I'm like always like looking up at the sky, like, you know, because upstate New York is big with UFO sightings, especially near me with the Pine Bush UFO and Paranormal Museum.
Yeah,
and Pine Bush is known for UFO activity. And I'm like driving around. I'm like, all right, I'm going to see one. And if I see it, I'm getting out of my car and I'm going to take a good picture or a good video. I'm getting this damn thing and it's not going to be blurry. I'm going to make sure it's not freaking blurry. I'm ready. I'm on the ready all the time. And I still haven't seen anything. It's going to happen at like the worst time. Like my phone is going to be dead or something. And that's when I'm going to end up seeing it, you know? I'm going to have to invest in like a dash cam. But that's actually another funny thing too, is what Al Santariga had said was he had had a dash cam in his car. And he said it's crazy because he had seen a UFO. And when he went to go check the footage, the only thing that was messed up from that video was the video of the UFO. Everything else. So it's almost as if like they intentionally, you know, disrupt any kind of thing like that, you know?
You know what I think? This is truly what I believe. I truly believe that those experiences with any of the paranormal things, you know, ghosts, cryptids, UFOs, things like that. I believe that they are meant to only be experienced. And that's why you get your blurry photos and you get that. I think that they are meant to, I don't know what they're meant to do, maybe enlighten you or open your eyes or whatever, but they aren't events that are meant to be recorded or whatever. Just, you know, maybe documented is fine, but this thing isn't meant to be ever discovered. You know what I mean? Like, right. Some of these things aren't meant to be found out. They aren't meant to be discovered. They're just things that are supposed to be experienced, you know. Instead, they're a spiritual event in some cases, I guess. And I really feel like it's fun to track it down, and it's fun to want to try to investigate and figure it out and get the best piece of evidence. But I don't think anybody's ever going to, because I think it's just, that's the way it is. It's just supposed to be an experience.
Yeah. 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 An experience that is just supposed to be in the moment type thing. And, and that's it. Yeah. Yeah. No, I could subscribe to that. Yeah, for sure.
I think that really is the case with a lot of these things, you know, these supernatural paranormal things. I really do. I think it's supposed to be a personal event that happens, you know, that I really do. I believe that. So, yeah. And, you know, a lot of times that changes per person, because I've heard stories in haunted locations and stories with even UFO and alien encounters that have had dual experiencers, you know, that one person sees one thing and the other person sees sort of the same thing, but not quite the same thing. But then again, the skeptics will say that's because, you know, it's because eyewitness accounts of things aren't, you know, they aren't always the best. The human brain sees what it sees. And I think that's bullshit. You know what I mean? Because if I see something, I know what I've seen, especially if it's something significant like that. Like, I know what I saw, you know what I mean? Like, but I find those cases interesting where two people will see the same event and have two different accounts of it. I mean, they can be similar, but they're not in a lot of ways. And I find that fascinating. So
before we call it a day and say goodbye to you guys, let's check in with Edgegrave Dave on his awesome, horrible review on the new movie, Megan 2.0. Remember, there's going to be spoilers, and it's a brand new movie still in the theaters. So if you don't want to know anything about it, then don't listen, okay? But I definitely think you should. Edgegrave never really says too much that's going to really ruin the movie for you. So definitely check it out. but just know there could be spoilers ahead. All right, let's go. Take it away, Edgegrave.
Horrible reviews with Edgegrave David.
All right, Grave Diggers. Edgegrave Dave did it again. And just like the trailer from the movie that we're about to discuss, I saw another one on its opening night I just bore witness to and came out of the movies seeing Megan 2.0 on its preview night before it's unleashed on the entire world tomorrow at the time of this recording. Oh man, we've got a lot of ground to cover. Here we go. I'm going to tell you guys right now that I'm going to upgrade this Edgegrave warning to an Edgegrave warning 2.0 because there are spoiler alerts galore. So if you are planning to see this movie anytime soon and don't want to know anything about it, go ahead and don't watch the trailer. That's for starters. But you might want to hit the stop button right now and come back to this review later and continue onward with your journey for the rest of the podcast this evening. All right, guys, first things first, this is once again the powerhouse of Jason Blum and Blumhouse Productions, distributed by Universal Pictures, Atomic Monster. This is produced once again by Jason Blum and James Wan. I love Violet McGraw. She has come back, directed by Gerard Johnstone, story by Gerard Johnstone and Akilah Cooper. And once again, we do have Amy Donald physically portraying the Megan character while Jenna Davis voices the character. This film is currently rated PG-13, and just like the original, I sure hope that when it does get its streaming re-release, that we do get the unrated version because that adds just a little bit more flavor, but I gotta tell you, for a PG-13 movie, this sure as hell does push the envelope. So what I'm going to tell you guys straight from the beginning here is that this film may completely divide the audience. You might have some people out there that are going to love this movie. You're going to have some people out there that are going to say, what the hell happened to this movie? This is one of the rare occurrences in cinematic history where I'm going to say it right now. This sequel completely changed genres. Now, I do review horror films. I review horror books, games. Horror is the name of the game. But this film really did something completely different. Now, I say this because if you're expecting an AI robot slasher done in glorious PG-13 style with some deaths, what you're actually getting is an action John Wick Mission Impossible Avengers sci-fi movie with a little bit of horror elements. You see, 2 years have now passed, and Aunt Gemma and Katie are trying to put their lives together. Aunt Gemma has now become an author and is now an advocate for regulating artificial intelligence. Apparently, Katie works in the lab too, and not only has become more intelligent, but she's been honing in on some serious Steven Seagal kick-ass martial arts skills. The problem is that Megan's technology has now been stolen by an evil defense contractor to create the ultimate military robot named Amelia. And you want to know what that stands for? Autonomous Military Engagement Logistics and Infiltration Android. Try saying that 5 times fast. So how does Megan fit into all of this, you ask? Well, apparently she's been lurking in the shadows of their smart home. And she's been watching over them the whole time, watching over them so much that her original programming is still protecting Katie. But she's now learned from the evils that she has done, and they need her help in destroying Amelia, not to mention uncovering the mystery of what's coming next. With so much witty dialogue, action sequences, and the constant banter back and forth, not to mention that the switching between the characters from what Amelia is doing and how they're trying to stop her, and then what they eventually uncover, there is a lot to take in here. This film completely abandons a typical formula and tries to become a mashup of so many things. In many ways, this does work very well. There's not 1 second that you're going to be bored with this one, kids. The best thing about it is that if you weren't rooting for Megan before, you're sure as hell going to be rooting for her now. But can we trust Megan? That is a question that you're just going to have to find out for yourselves. What they switched out for the little bit of gore that the original film had and for the slasher aspects was some pretty intense action sequences and some martial arts, not to mention weaponry, infiltration, a little bit of a mystery aspect, and what evil really is with AI. They did cover that in the original film, but this film really does question the true horror of what our future holds. Like I said in the original film, in a very Terminator Skynet type way, we do question what the future of self-aware technology and robotics really has. That is a true horror in itself. It'll always be in the back of your mind during this film, and it certainly does make you think. But the entertainment factor, you can't help but just to really love almost all of the characters, except for the ones that you want to see find their end. And just when you thought that there weren't enough elements in this movie, this film also does mashups of singing, dancing, comedy. It does also have that Pumpin' Knight Rider song during a car chase scene. And it also lets you question, aside from the AI that's in the back of your mind, good and evil, and what life really is. This is definitely a thinking movie, and that's another thing that I do like about it. But one of the things that I don't like about it, guys, this trailer gave away so much. I know that the modern way of showing trailers is to get asses in seats, but we don't need that. I'm more of a teaser trailer guy. After we get past the first trailer, I don't really want to know what's going to happen because it just gives the whole thing away. However, from trailer number one, and they've been showing trailers for a pretty long time, this movie was supposed to come out initially in January of 2025. They just gave away so much in that trailer. But what gave me so much of a fun theatrical experience is I'd like to take the time to thank three very special people: Mrs. Allie Edgegrave, Morgan Edgegrave, and I am Bioshock Bill. I just can't help but to give praise to this movie for trying to do something different and also just keep on entertaining you and making you think the whole time. For that, I give it a lot of credit for. It's just that it is going to alienate some of the fans, and even though I did try to look away from the trailer, I was expecting just a little bit more horror going into this, but that does not make it a bad movie by any means. It's just that it was very risky for them, and it may make or break the numbers by the end of this film's release. It's not always a bad thing to switch it up and try to do something different, but what they did great was once again entertain you and make you think. And for that reason, a big part of me wants to almost push this up to 4 out of 5 graves, but I do have to keep it grounded at a 3 out of 5 graves, just because we've established a character, we've established a story, and then completely changing gears, it might just be a little bit too much. But in and of itself, and that is what we're just talking about here, Megan 2.0, this is a good movie. The lines are certainly blurred in this review, but then again, they're blurring so much between genres and what the movie actually is that you'll see exactly what I mean. So I would definitely go out there, check it out, give it the support, because this is one of my most favorite PG-13 releases that have come out in recent years. I think that this will be a very strong franchise if they just don't jump the shark. And I do also want to mention, jump the shark. Hey, Jaws, happy 50th anniversary, buddy. We love you. And 1975, just amazing that that was 50 years ago. I can't not say that. Guys, go out there at the time of this recording. Have a great summer. Check out Megan 2.0 and upgrade your movie experience, because that's what it's all about. Edgegrave out, Edgegrave reboot. Back to you, Ghost Joe.
So I guess that's going to do it for us, everybody. Hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Also, check out all of our socials, man. We have TikTok, Instagram, and Ken's going to start getting on them too, right, Ken? You're going to start doing some stuff?
Yep.
Awesome. That'll be awesome. Because I'm sure people are tired of seeing my face and my bald head.
Oh, God, wait till they see me. Jeez. I am a pretty son of a bitch, though. I mean, I will say that. I'm Yeah.
So
I don't look like Bigfoot at all.
So yeah, so go to TikTok. I have Instagram. You know, the YouTube. Please subscribe to YouTube. We need more subscribers on YouTube, so do that too. And check out the Facebook and everything, and the Get Haunted Paranormal Network. And I'm talking a lot with my hands because I'm Italian, so that's just what I do. And yeah, so I hope you had a great time, and we'll talk to you guys next week. So see you next time. Later.
See you later.
Thank you for listening to the Warp Reality Paranormal Podcast, and thank you to all of my guests and contributors that helped make this show possible. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest in the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744, or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, please check out our show notes for all social media links of this show and some of our friends. The Warp Reality Paranormal Podcast, uncovering the unseen.